Great, thanks everyone. Hello, my name is Hannah and I'm a compulsive overeater. Thanks very much for letting me be. Thanks very much for being here. Thanks for letting me be of service today. As mentioned, I am dialing in from London in the UK. I must admit, I never really know how to start my OA shares. So I often just think maybe just start at the beginning. I don't know when I became a compulsive overeater. I don't know why I became a compulsive overeater. I don't think I ever really remember a time when I wasn't one. I know I was told that literally the day I was born, one of the very first things I did was I put my middle finger and ring finger in my mouth and sucked my fingers to soothe myself. And I very quickly progressed to sucking my thumb. And from ever since I can remember, I soothed myself orally through my mouth. And when I think about it, I think, I sucked my thumb for a very long time. And I actually think the food started in real earnest when I was told I couldn't suck my thumb anymore. And it was always just a way to comfort myself. It was always a way. I don't know what it is about me. I know I come from a family tree that is rooted in addiction and eating disorders. I know it, there is a genetic element for me. But I also know that I felt powerless from a young age. I also don't think I ever really understood or comprehended the powerlessness over food until a lot later. For a long time, I just believed I had a problem with my weight. I was a chubby kid who became a kind of fat teenager, who became a morbidly obese young woman. And by the time I came into OA, when I was 29, I believe I was about 180 kilos, which I think is about 600 pounds. And I for a very long time, I just believed I had a problem with my weight. That was the problem. And I always said it felt like my life was like dominoes, and all my dominoes were all lined up, and the very first one was lose weight. And if I knocked that domino, then I'd be happy. That would be the next one that fell over. Then I'd find the man of my dreams. Then I'd get a dream job. Then I'd, all these other things would just happen in my life. I just needed to lose weight. That was the thing. That was the problem. And it took me a really long time to realize that the weight was a symptom of a much bigger problem, which was food. And actually, I think, and I've had sponsees over the years, and I've worked with people in this program. I think people who are smart really struggle with this program. I really struggled with it. I really struggled to get it. And I used to sort of really overthink it. And I think one of the things with our illness is that for me, like my behaviors around food became more and more crazy. And there's no logic to being a compulsive overeater. Like it doesn't make sense when you look at it sort of sensibly and rationally. Like it doesn't make sense to eat food to the point where I'm physically in pain. It doesn't make sense for me to eat food that's soggy or cold or I don't even like. At one point I stole food from a stranger's plate in a restaurant. Like this doesn't make sense. And I think, I am quite smart. And there was almost like my brain couldn't physically square it. It didn't understand, like, why would I do these crazy things around food? It doesn't make sense. So my brain just pretended I didn't do it. That was the only way I could cope for so long. And I was in such chronic denial that I had a problem with food, that it had to take the food behaviors to get so extreme that I couldn't lie my way out of it. I couldn't deny my way out of it anymore. And like the lies I told myself would like they were just becoming more and more pointless. Like I'd go into a supermarket on my lunch break at work and I'd look at something on the shelf and be like, I'm going to buy those and I'm going to share them with everyone in the office. It's like, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. And I'd reach, pick them up. And before I'd even put this item in my basket, I know that's a lie. I know full well I'm not going to share these items with anyone. I know that I'm going to eat all of them at my desk. I'm going to try and make it sneakily look like I'm just eating one and try, but actually I'm eating six of them. And I knew I was going to do that. I still had to tell myself that lie to like pick it up off the shelf and put it in my basket. And it was only when I started doing this more and more, I was like, this is crazy. this is not normal food behavior. And I think once I kind of twigged and once it kind of slotted in that, oh, this isn't a weight issue, this is a food issue, I did come into OA quite quickly after that. And that's purely because I knew about OA because my mum went to OA when I was a teenager. She didn't stick around in OA. I know she didn't work all of the steps. She might have had a sponsor, I don't know. But I kind of, as soon as I kind of twigged that, oh, this behavior is kind of nuts around food, it was then that I kind of came into OA. And I remember going into my first meeting. I did the classic of like looking online at where my local meeting was, and it's like, okay, yeah, that's where it is. And then about 2 weeks later, I'd check the website again, and oh, yeah, the meeting's still there. And yeah, and then maybe I'd reach out and just check, you know, is this that meeting still running? And then yeah, it's still there. Still didn't go. But when I finally sort of plucked up the courage to go to my first meeting, I kind of came in. It was in a church in South London, and it's now my home group. But I came in and I sat there and I just cried the whole meeting. And it felt like I was choking on shame. I was so full of shame. It felt like it was up in my throat. And I just heard people speaking over and over and over again. And I just cried the whole meeting. And I can't remember what was really said. I can't remember really who spoke or anything like that. But I just remember feeling this feeling of like, oh, this is where I belong. Oh, I've got to come back here. This is it. This is where I'm supposed to be. And at the end of the meeting, actually, the newcomer greeter came up to me. I was trying to run out the door. I was ready to run. It was all too much. She's like, "Well, here's a newcomer pack, and I've written my number on it, and I've taken your number from the We Care sheet." So, oh, okay, great, thank you. And then a couple of days later, I remember I was going to a meeting for work, and I came out of the tube and the underground, and there was a missed call on my phone, and so I was walking to this meeting, and I listened to the voicemail, and it was this newcomer greeter. And she called me and she's like, "Hi, you know, I'm just calling to see how you are. You don't need to call me back. You don't need to say anything. No need to respond. But I was just thinking about you, and I wanted to make sure you're okay. Have a lovely day." And that small act of kindness absolutely floored me. It was so humbling, and I just thought I'd never experienced that kind of kindness before. From a person who I'd never known. And, you know, the world doesn't treat fat, overweight people that nicely a lot of the time. And to have such kindness was so, yeah, it was so off guarding. It just hit me totally off guard. And it was, I think, one of the reasons why I kept coming back. And so yeah, so I, that was my first meeting was June or July of 2018. And I basically then spent the next few months doing everything other than get a sponsor. So I got all the books, I got the leaflets, I went to meetings, I went to a Region 9 convention, I had a weekend retreat, you name it, I did it other than get a sponsor because I knew as soon as I got a sponsor, I'd actually have to start working the steps, and that was far too scary. So it felt like I had to really dip every single toe in the water to double check that, you know, this wasn't a cult, that this was really what I wanted to do. Oh yeah, I really am powerless. Okay. And I had to do literally everything other than get a sponsor. And then to really make sure I was ready. But I did in the end get a sponsor. And I started working with her sort of the December of that same year, 2018. I became abstinent on the 12th of December, 12 and 12, not by design. And I've maintained abstinence ever since. So I've just celebrated my 6 years of abstinence in this program. And that has been with the same sponsor that whole time. I have had a lot of physical recovery in that time. I am now at a healthy body weight. Actually, one of the things I'd like to talk about briefly because it's relevant for me at the moment is, because I am a 100 pounder, you know, I've lost 100 pounds. I had a lot of loose skin, and it was something I was really worried about. It was one of the first things I was terrified about. One of the first bits of step work that my sponsor suggested I do was to write down all the reasons why I'm scared of recovery. What are the reasons I don't want to be in recovery? And I did have plenty. And the two that would stick out to me was, number one, who am I if I'm not the fattest person in the room? And two, what am I going to do if I lose all the weight, have all that loose skin, and I still don't like what I see in the mirror? Those are the two biggest reasons I had that were holding me back. And what I can say now is that 6 years in, who am I if I'm not the fattest person in the room? I have recovered. And I love the thinking of the word recover. I have revealed the person who I was always meant to be. Thank you, acknowledged.
Ten
And
10 minutes in.
wonderful, thank you. And so yeah, so I, you know, who I am is I don't have to be the fattest person in the room. I can just be me. I can be a child of God, and I can follow my higher power's will. And what is it like to look in the mirror and see body covered in loose skin? It's all right. It's all right, actually. It's not all that bad. It's not all that scary. And what has happened is that, you know, at first, when I first started losing the weight, I actually really hated it. I really hated losing weight because all of a sudden, people were commenting on my body. And it was at a time when all I wanted was to be hidden. I don't want anyone to look at me. I don't want anyone to see me. And it's like, oh, have you lost weight? I mean, I'm still in a much larger body. But all of a sudden, my body, and like it was almost like I, in my delusion, in my denial, which is such a big part of my illness, I wanted to believe that none of you could really see just how big I was. And all of a sudden, you're now commenting on the size of my body. You mean you see it and you're looking at it and you're observing it and judging it? Like it was just my worst nightmare. And you know, this idea that I needed to accept my body and all, oh, it's just too much, it's too much, it's too much. But really, slowly, one day at a time, I have moved from this place of shame and hatred, you know, through working the steps, through surrendering a lot of surrendering my body. Just as I'm powerless over food, I am also powerless over my body. I've had a lot of health stuff in recovery. I was diagnosed with early onset menopause, and it really changed my relationship with my body. But I accept my body one day at a time. And I accept that my body changes every single day. It has changed every single day in this program. It has got smaller, loose skin has appeared, new things have evolved. And I really just surrender my body and my body's appearance to my higher power. And what was quite incredible is that there was a point where I realized I still had a lot of skin, but I couldn't quite tell how much was skin and how much was fat and how much I should be worried about. And so I went to my GP, my general physician, my primary care doctor, I think, in the US. And I said, "Is this all loose skin? Is this fat? What is this?" And she said, "Oh, that's definitely loose skin. The only way you could remove that would be surgery. Do you want me to put you forward for a referral?" So, oh. All right then, okay, sure. And so I went to the surgeon, and I was expecting to have to like fight my case, and people are going, "Oh, make sure you like really ramp it up and like over exaggerate." I'm like, no, that's not how I'm gonna do this. I'm just gonna go, I'm gonna see and see what happens. I put it in God's hands. Let's see what the surgeon says. And so I'm fully expecting it to be this kind of debate, and he's like, "Okay, so surgery will be about 4 hours. Waiting list is this long. It'll be with me. Here's some photos." And I'm like, "Wait, hang on. Like, is that it? Like, do I just get the surgery?" He was like, "If your GP wants you to have it, if you want to have it, I'm prepared to give it to you." And that was that. So I was on the waiting list for about a year, and I was entitled to have a full fleur-de-lis abdominoplasty on the NHS. Which is very unusual. It does not happen very often. It's normally a procedure that you pay for in the UK. But I got it for free, and I had the surgery on the 6th of December. This just gone, so just before my 6 year. So I'm noticing sixes and twelves. The 6th of the 12th, 6 days before my 12 and 12. And anyway, so maybe there's something here about sixes and 12 in my recovery. And yeah, and actually, I think about it, I'm now about 6, 7 weeks post recovery. I'm still recovering. I'm still very swollen. But I've got another body again. And there was a moment where I've never had a slim body as an adult, like without loose skin. And there was a moment I was going to change all my dressings, and I caught sight of myself in the mirror, and I was like, "Ooh, that's different. It's a bit different. That's a bit exciting." And I had this real moment of, "Why? Why is that exciting?" And I had this real peace that came over me, and it was like, it's exactly the same body that I've had this whole time, before, after, during, all of it. It's the same body, and one day at a time, I'm looking at it slightly differently again, and it just looks a bit different again, and it's totally fine. And to have this real serenity and peace around my body is an unbelievable gift of this program. That I did not think that that would be possible for me. And the one thing I would say is that the physical recovery, that side of things, the first thing I would say is it happened only after I prioritized the emotional and spiritual first. All the while I seek physical recovery, it was out of reach. My weight has gone down and plateaued, down and plateaued. Every moment of plateau came from when I was obsessed with the weight loss. As soon as I stopped thinking about it, as soon as I stopped imagining it and all the rest of it, it took care of itself. You have to work an emotional and spiritual program and allow the physical to do its own thing. And then the other thing I would say is that my physical recovery, weight loss is one part of it. My physical recovery is so much bigger than that. I am sat here now in a flat that is clean and tidy. That is part of my physical recovery. I have currently got braces on because for years in my illness, I did not brush my teeth. I did not floss my teeth. Anyone who's heard me do a share before will have heard me talk about my blooming teeth. I can't not talk about them because flossing my teeth every single day is absolutely part of my recovery. That is physical recovery for me. I look after this body, this God-given body, this perfectly imperfect body is worthy of being looked after, and that is my physical recovery. I wash my clothes. I don't wear clothes that smell. I don't have two dresses that I wear on rotation, and the dresses that I wear were the only ones that cut in a certain style, which meant that I could wear the smallest possible size than what I actually was and try and deny what size I really was. I have a wardrobe of
3
clothes that I
minutes.
enjoy. So is that 15?
You've got 3 minutes as a guide, but you finish up whatever you
Thank
want.
you. Thank you. So yeah. Whenever I do these, I always think, I don't know what to say. And then I waffle on far longer on one or two things than I was planning to. But yeah, in terms of them, very quickly, just on my emotional and spiritual recovery, I think the key thing for me, if I were to try and sum up my recovery, my step 11, whenever I do my step 11, my spirit is like surrender and acceptance. Surrender and acceptance. I do my step 11 meditation in the morning. That is the mantra, surrender and acceptance. I live a life on my higher power's will. Surrendering and accepting all the while I'm rooting, I'm grasping, I'm seeking, even emotions like excitement and all of that. I have to be really careful. For me, my higher power, the best way I can describe God to me is it's a feeling. God is not something I can think. It is not something I can comprehend. I can't write it down. I can't describe it. I cannot think God. I have to feel God. And so I can only feel God when I shut my head up. I have to turn my head off. I have to bring it down to my body. I have to feel, and then I can surrender and I can accept. And it took me a while to kind of get to grips with the idea that I can't define my higher power. My sponsor very wisely said to me, "Well, if you do ever figure out a definition for God, do let me and the other few billion people on this planet know, because we'd all really like to know." And that kind of recognition of, yeah, do you know what? I don't need to know all the answers with this. I just need to do the action. This is a program of action, and I take the action. Sometimes that is jumping out of the plane and then figuring out where your parachute is and where the ripcord is, but that is the leap of faith of this program. And so, yeah, I'm just so grateful that this program has given me my life. And like, it's not even that it's given me my life back. Like, I don't remember. It's not like this was a life I had before and it's been returned to me. Like, no, this was the life I was supposed to have. And I'll end on one thing. My life is so interwoven with OA now. I was supposed to have a call with a sponsee in the middle of the day today. She couldn't make it. She wasn't well. So she said, "Oh, can we reschedule for Sunday?" And I said, "Yeah, sure." And I said, "What time?" He said, "Well, can we do the evening?" I said, "Oh, I've got another sponsee call at 8 p.m." She said, "Well, what about the morning first thing?" I said, "Oh, I've got another sponsee call at 7:30." She said, "Okay. What about Saturday morning?" It's like, "Oh, well, I'm the chair of OAGB and I've got a board meeting from 9 a.m. to 12 noon." And she's like, "What are you doing at any point this weekend that isn't OA?" And I was like, "I'm going for lunch with my brother." But that's it. My life is service. My life is gift of the gift of service, of give the gift of this program. I give it wholeheartedly because I've gained so much. You know, it's so easy to give to a program and to a community that has given me so much in return. And yeah, I'm always grateful for the opportunity to do service because service has been given to me more fold, more times over than I could ever possibly count. I could spend my life in service and it still wouldn't be the same as the amount of service that's been given me. Whether it was that newcomer greeter who called me that first time or all the various people in all the meetings all over the world I've been to. So yeah, so grateful for all of you, and I'll leave it there. Thank you.